Hey, listener, just a quick content warning on this episode. This episode deals with assault that is heavily implied to be sexual in nature, very briefly at the top of the episode. But a more prevalent theme that you should be aware of is suicide. This episode has a lot of themes of suicide in it. It is a major plot point in this episode. So if that is something you're not going to be comfortable listening to, just skip this one. We'll see you next week. All you're going to miss is me awkwardly trying to navigate a conversation about the friend zone with Laura. It's fine. You're not missing much, okay? And if you have any thoughts about hurting yourself, please reach out for help. The world is a better place with you in it. Somebody loves you, I promise. Even if it's just a random voice on the internet telling you that right now, you are loved.
Hello, and welcome to Who Are You? It's a Babylon 5 watchcast by a couple of former strangers who are now friends and still getting to know each other over one of their favorite shows from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Laura.
And I'm Jafer. Oh, we're doing plot poker, by the way. We're going to get to
true.
It. We're opening cards right now. So when you hear rap packs opening and stuff, or, ooh, a Zathras, that's what's going on in the background, just so it's said.
Hello. So I deal myself in.
Yeah.
And I got my cards ready here.
I don't have any great cards this time. I'm really sad about it.
I also did not open a single winner in three packs.
I feel like this box has been a big disappointment to me, personally. What about you?
I've hit a ton of bangers in this box.
Really? My box
has been
The
last time we
duds.
Opened packs, I was like adding two cards a pack to these piles. And this last, I only got one non-generic. I got, like, Thug. I did get Head on a Pike, which is fun.
Yeah, we had that one last time.
I got Sniper. I got another one of Londo's Wives, who I think is one that I already had.
Yeah, I think I might have Mario. All of Londo's Wives finally. Yeah.
Yeah. I got Xenophobia with that girl that terrifies Veer to his core.
Right, yeah.
Rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like it. Not a whole lot going on.
Yeah,
this,
I mean,
I
got Major Krantz, which is a cool card, but I mean, we got that last time. The funniest one I got is the Night Watch guy, and it's his deal is Cocksure. That's his like name. And because I'm a child, it's nice and funny.
Cock.
Look, if you were coming to this podcast for maturity and you've stayed this far and
you know better
and you're just figuring it out
now. If
you're
a new listener, man, this is a hell of a cold open to come in on.
maybe go back a few. We'll see you later. Yeah. Man, I just don't have anything good. I don't know that I added anything to my piles.
We actually did see a bit of a bump in listeners in the last 48 hours.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, the P1 for last time on aired yesterday.
Yes,
as we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. And after I got over Ben texting me freaking out, because he'll get to hear this, which is going to be great because he's not sitting here as part of this conversation for the last 2 months. So we, a couple of months ago, were talking. You had let me know that there was kind of a call to action, that they were worried about making some finances or something. And they had asked, they said the P1s weren't fully booked out for the first time in a long time, right?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So along those lines. So I bought one as a show support for The Greatest Generation because I'm a very long time listener.
Yeah,
I've
we support The Greatest Generation.
For a number of years.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, like, they're cool guys. Like, mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to have a number of conversations with them at this point. I've gone on a leftist rant in front of them, and they're still willing to guest on this pod. in fact, I went on a drunk leftist rant in a pool in Las Vegas in front of them to really just paint that picture, and
yeah.
They're still willing to guest on this pod. So the least I can do is throw them some advertising cash
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And so Ben freaks out, messages me for the last like 2 months since we had that conversation where you're like, hey, now's the time to buy a P1. So I did that day. Mm-hmm. I have been planting the idea of buying one in the near future with Ben.
Uh-huh.
But I've always delayed it.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for like 2 months. I've been all like, oh, yeah, well, you know, yeah, well, we should buy advertising soon, but I don't think we're really ready yet. We need more of a backlog. And then just stuff like that, because I am the analytics guy. Ben assumes I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, I do. Like, it's my career. Like, mm-hmm. I understand a lot of this stuff. And so I've been using that to my advantage to get him just completely, like, I want him to be thinking about it, but I want him to think that there's no way it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, yeah, when it does happen, he freaks out.
Yeah, what a delicious balance. Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened, because he started to hear the P1 and it starts with the pitch of the podcast. Uh-huh. And he just like gets really upset because he thought someone stole our podcast.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's all like someone got our idea and then they advertised. Now they're bigger than it's just all like, no, Ben. No, Ben, that's us.
Yeah,
and
that
I got
was
you
for
so
you.
Good. Uh-huh. That was that moment. Like, I didn't need to be with Ben on his nightly walk as he was listening to The Greatest Generation when that aired to know exactly what happened, because we've been friends for 20 something years at this point. Like, mm-hmm. coming up on, like, I understand what is going on with him most of the time. Like, you can build the scenario, and I get it. And the same goes for me. You know, he can read me like a book as well,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Sure, yeah.
And just knowing that that moment happened then.
It's a chef's
that's
kiss.
That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
That is Ben and I, along with a lot of our other friends from college, have gone on record of saying is what makes our group of friends different than most group of friends is our willingness to commit to a long-term bit.
Yeah.
I have a friend that I have been randomly prank calling in intervals ranging from 15 minutes to 5 years in between these calls since 2005.
That's fun. That'll be 20 years old soon too.
Yeah, right? With a joke that we made at a pen and paper role-playing session once. It was just like, it was a little catchphrasey thing. We said it a bunch. I waited 2 days after the session. I called them and said it, and that started this chain. And it is still going. I've actually, he's due for one, because I know he doesn't listen to this podcast. So I owe him one right now from probably, I've seen him about 8 or 9 times since I've done it.
Uh-huh.
So it's ripe. Mm-hmm. I think the last time I did it would have been 2017. So
that's getting a little stale. Yeah, you got to do something.
No, it's perfect. Because I'm going to do it for like 2 days in a row then, and then I'll skip like 4 days and then I'll do it again. That's going to be so good. Just like our little fake episode of Babylon 5. I got my cards all ready. Do you got your cards ready?
I'm ready. I'm flipping them now. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so we're going to have a little bit of a different starter in this.
Okay.
Different.
No murder to cold open?
No murder to cold open this time. We have the game ambassador, whose name is apparently Vin Lesh. And let's put this in a point in time. This is going to be like around the Centauri use of the mass drivers.
Okay.
Against the Narn homeworld. And Vin Lesh actually mobilizes a few in the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, and they want to hold a war crimes trial.
Ah.
Mass drivers. Seems like a war crime, right?
Should be.
Doesn't get discussed enough, I think.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So
really
this
doesn't.
This episode is here to correct that.
Fantastic.
So we put, you know, Londo is the representative from the Centauri Republic on Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. So he has to sit and answer questions at this war crimes trial. And maybe there's still active things going on against some Narn colonies. You know, like maybe we're moving the mass drivers at this point. We're going to go hit other colonies and things.
Man, I hope they pull out all the TVs and set up for questioning that they had in the pilot.
Yeah, we got to have Londo on every single one of those TVs. Yeah. Like 16.
We haven't seen that shit since the pilot. I want that back.
Yeah.
Just for this one scene. It's the interrogation setup of the council chamber.
Yeah, hell yeah. Let's pull it all out. Let's do it. And, you know, these Centauri warships are moving with their mass drivers. And the solution to halt any further Centauri war crimes is we send the White Star Fleet.
Hell yeah.
Got the White Star Fleet out there at the colonies, turning these ships around. You know, a nice standoff that we've gotten a couple really nice standoffs in the show. Let's do another one. Why not? But the twist at the end of this plot is, you know, we see a Narn colony that's, whew, they're relieved. They're going to live. No. At the end, it gets consumed by shadows.
Oh, no.
So dark. What's our B plot?
I have not flipped over any of these cards yet.
Ooh, exciting.
So we're doing it off the cuff.
All right.
Ooh. When did we say this was? Mass Drivers? That puts us in season two, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic,
I think you're
right. Because Talia Winters is the star of our B plot.
Perfect.
And Talia. Oh, yeah, this is a super season two plot. Talia is having to deal with Nightwatch. So Nightwatch is in growing in their power right now. They haven't fully taken over all the stuff that they're going to take over. But as part of this all, they reach out to Talia to be like, hey, we need you to do some psychic investigation for us. So we're questioning these people to join Night Watch, and we need you to psychically test their loyalty. And she's all like, that's illegal. And he's all like, nope, new rules, Night Watch law, baby. Ain't got to worry about that shit. And she's all like, this doesn't seem like something the PsyCorps would sign off on. And so she actually has to reach out to Bester, who's her contact for Babylon 5 liaison stuff. That's why he's always on the station. We find out that's actually like an official role for him, which is why he gets stuck with it all the time. And we never see any other PsyCops, at least not without him.
Right.
So she has to reach out to Bester to talk to him about it and stuff. And there's a peace accord, which doesn't really make sense. So I'm just going to say it is a kind of like an accord between the PsyCorps and the Night Watch. That's very, hey, we're all on the side of Earth, so you're not going to involve our people in this. And in exchange, we will focus on protecting Earth from the alien menace or some shit like that. Bester just like charisma and psychic pushes his way through to getting PsyCorps out of the Night Watch bullshit, which is why it never goes any further.
Very interesting.
But it ends with Talia having a premonition. And this premonition, we will come to find later in the season, is of her unsurfaced personality pushing through.
Oh no. It would have been nice to have that hinted somewhere, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a dark episode.
Sure is. Lots of war crimes.
Yeah. Lots of war crimes. Lots of unsettlement.
Fascism. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you rate an episode like this?
I think that this would probably be a really enthralling episode of Babylon 5. This might even be so enthralling yet so frustrating that it's a fuck this episode.
Oh, man. Did we write our first fuck this episode?
We might have written our first fuck this episode. I feel like this has a lot of potential in really upsetting me.
Yeah, especially
which is
Londo.
The goal of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's great. You know, we got to run the whole gambit with this show.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our fake episode, but we do have a real one to talk about. We've got season 5, episode 14, Meditations on the Abyss.
Hey, did you notice when we opened this episode that we are like staring down at Babylon 5? We are like,
it's a weird shot.
It is, but you know what else it's like? It's like what looking else? Into the abyss.
Ooh, I did not make that connection, but that is very, very true.
I have a feeling somebody put thought into that. I don't think that's just me making this one up.
I don't know if JMS just stopped using the Usenets as much in season 5 or just stopped responding and was just lurking.
Uh-huh.
But there hasn't been a lot of comments from him on the last handful of episodes, which is also why I haven't interjected a bunch.
Uh-huh.
This one had absolutely nothing. Wow. No comments under JMS Speaks on Midwinter for this episode.
Interesting.
Not the first time, but it did seem kind of weird. He did not, I guess, solicit a lot of feedback about the linear storyline.
Yeah, maybe a good call. Yeah,
definitely is.
Yeah, and that's what we start off with too, because Delenn's crystal is going off. Is this a communicator? Is this an alarm clock? It's funny either way. I think
this is like a beeper. Call me, beep me if you wanna
reach me. Yeah.
I think this is Lanier setting off the pyramid beeper to let Delenn know that he's made it to the station.
Yeah. When you have a secret beeper.
She immediately goes, yeah. She's got a secret beeper to go meet her ex-assistant.
Yeah.
Who has feelings for her.
Yeah.
Look, we'll have a whole conversation about this in about 2 minutes. So let's just get the rest of the way there.
Sure. Hey, you know something else about this season that I really feel very satisfied with, but also sad because it's only for a few more episodes at this point. Hmm. Like, the costuming is fantastic. This show looks fantastic.
A plus. Yeah.
I don't know why it's so much better than seasons 1 through 4, even.
TNT like, money.
Yeah, it's a TNT money thing. I don't know if they're using
it. They got all that money to... It's the movies. They got all the money. They got millions of dollars to make those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you so can much of that budget was, reusable. So.
Yeah. Like, you know, this cloak that Delenn puts on after her beeper goes off to go down to presumably some bar in down below, right?
Mm-hmm.
This cloak, the material looks fantastic. The details on it are fantastic. I don't know if it's just clothing and costumes or there's some lighting things that are different, but it always looks really good this season. I wish there was more.
Yeah. I do have one exception, but we'll get to it later in the episode.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I do agree, though. The costume's been on point.
Mm-hmm.
So Delenn can't sleep. Her beeper goes off. So she does what any reasonable adult in their mid-60s does when they can't sleep in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
They go clubbing.
Of course. You've never done that? Yeah. Well, you can be forgiven. You're not in your mid-60s, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe then. Some drunk guy shows up and harasses her.
Yeah.
And she breaks his finger in retaliation, which is just... This is a moment for the ladies, right?
Yeah.
This is so satisfying.
I wrote, she's in this club for 30 seconds before Elon Sleazebagino is just the worst human being.
You want to buy some death sticks?
Yeah, this guy's putting it all out there. There is no veneer of civilization.
Right. At first, I'm like, oh, this guy is just a fucking creep. And then he dropped the, this is the face you're going to be looking at all night line. And that's when I was just all like, fuck.
Yeah.
That was the line for me that was just like, like I felt my stomach convulse when he said it. Just like,
Yeah, this is for the ladies, for us to enjoy if we resent being socialized to make creepy men comfortable, like worrying about their comfort. Yeah, it was a weird thing that we did.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is like... Obviously, this is going to be a lot more real for you than it is for me due to our different experiences
within
our lives. A very naive part of my brain, and I recognize that it's a naive part of my brain, tells me that this is too ridiculous to even resemble reality.
Mm. You want to believe that, don't you?
I want to believe that so bad. I really wish. I wish that that was humanity.
Yeah,
and I know it's not. And it's just, it makes me so sad.
Yeah.
That this and worse shit than this exists.
Because
even this should not be plausible. This should be so over the top, it's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. And that fucking sucks.
Yeah. Maybe to some of this audience, you know, watching on TNT, it's that funny and absurd. But then some of us are going, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She breaks his finger, and then is that when the ranger comes in?
Yeah. Yeah. That's when Lanier shows up and beats the shit out of this guy.
Which we do know. Lanier's got his martial arts badges and mm-hmm. belts and whatever. Like, he's accomplished.
We saw him take out most of a club while Londo was fumbling around once.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very enjoyable. That was enjoyable, Lanier. This is not as much.
Yeah, and he reminds us how fucked this is to Theme. So they have a conversation when they come back from Theme. They're kind of hiding out and down below because no one can know that she's sending Lanier specifically because of his contact with the Centauri and his time on Babylon 5, but they don't want anyone to be suspicious on why he was there. Instead of just, like, having him be there for, oh, well, he's going to his training exercises and this was the stop. And then he could have seen people. There's a totally legitimate way you could do this that is not at all suspicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To Londo, who's the person she is feigning that this is suspicious to at first, before finally admitting that it's Sheridan. But just, like, why?
Yeah.
That's my biggest question here. And I am not saying that Lanier's unwanted attention to Delenn is Delenn's fault. That is not what I am saying.
Of course.
I'm
going to
make
that
perfectly crystal clear right off the fucking bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not faulting Delenn for wanting a friendship out of someone she considered her friend.
Mm-hmm.
That is normal as well and perfectly fine behavior. However,
mm-hmm.
Lanier has made it crystal clear he is not capable of being her friend.
Yeah, crystal.
He's gone out of his way to say that he's going to wait for her husband to die so that they can be together.
Uh-huh.
He has said those words.
Yeah.
There was no implication, right? Like,
Well, they're Minbari and all they know is crystals, right? So.
Oh, okay.
I was making a crystal joke.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway.
Crystals. Okay. No. That was good. I just
thank you
catch
for
it.
Reminding us why it was crystal clear. Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm not blaming Delenn. I don't understand why, Delenn.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you call him when you know this is the situation?
Yeah.
And why do you do this? Why do you bring him down below and hide him away when you could very easily have just been like, he's visiting, he's here for 6 hours in between picking up stuff. And we went and had dinner because, you know, he worked for me for 4 fucking years.
Yeah.
Like,
Delenn
even
has an
Sheridan,
office. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a number of perfectly legitimate ways to handle this contact and do this mission that aren't, let's hide in a cubby hole where we literally are like, sitting room only.
Uh-huh.
We had to crawl into this thing in the darkest candlelit corner of the station we could find.
Uh-huh.
This fucking Careless Whisper playing in the club through the wall and we just can't hear it. Like, why this location? This is so fucking weird, Delenn.
Her reason for hiding it from Sheridan also is really flimsy to me. Well, he loves me and he wouldn't ask you to do this because he knows I'd be worried about your safety and he doesn't want to make that decision. And so I'm just mm-hmm. doing it for him. I don't know. I found that whole thing really convoluted and didn't make a ton of sense. Like, she's Ranger One, right?
Yeah.
She says where
She's
rangers
the
go.
Of a military organization.
She says where rangers go. Go where she sends you. Like,
yeah.
Why would Sheridan get to override that? He's not Ranger One.
Nope.
Just don't like it.
I feel for Delenn in losing a friend because they have developed feelings for you and they do not have the capacity for being your friend. Mm-hmm. I empathize. It's something I've had to do in the past. I'm sure that's a lot of people have had that situation in their lives. Mm-hmm. And it fucking sucks. It's shitty to lose a friend that way.
Yeah.
But it happens. And this is not how you try and maintain a fucking friendship with that person.
Nope. I don't think this is the way to do it.
I mean, Lanier put himself in his situation with her, to be absolutely clear again. But fucking, this feels like she's abusing that.
Yeah.
And it's not okay either.
I think it was right after this I made in my notes, this whole subplot sucks. Just
yeah,
sucks.
You know what? You know what doesn't suck though.
What's that?
McBarry's. Are you not done? I felt the segue, so I took it.
Yeah.
Did you have more to say? Okay, say more. It's fine.
No. I was gonna say we didn't mention that in this scene. He also tells her about his, you know, super deep dream on the Day of the Dead, where he talked to Morden, and Morden said he's going to betray the Rangers.
Yeah.
So she doesn't seem to take too much out of that yet.
You know, Morden's a shitbag.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I could 100% be of the opinion Morden's just fucking with you from beyond the grave because he got one last chance to.
Yeah, he just wanted to fuck with somebody one last time. So here it's you, man. We all draw straws sometimes.
Really putting the screws to Lanier in his stomach. Much like McBarry's. Got
yeah,
there anyways.
You did it again.
What up? I did it again. Two segues, baby.
Yeah, Vera's back.
Yeah.
We get to see Vera. I guess he's been out grocery shopping. I didn't know that groceries came in such fancy boxes.
This is like vintage hats is what I feel like should be in these boxes.
Absolutely.
Fruit.
Yeah. Some vintage heels too, maybe, and one or two of them.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
He's been binging on McBarry's too much and he's been neglecting the kitchen. So he's here to restock Londo's kitchen, it seems.
The old golden head bones.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an Earth company that is making McBarry's,
100%.
Do they serve flarn? Like deep fried flarn?
Oh, I hope it's just fast food McBarry food.
Yeah.
Or what else would it be? Yeah.
Yeah, like why would you call it McBarry's otherwise, right? But
I really want, it's like, we do, like their slogan, right? Is we do a 4-day fast in preparation so that you don't have to. It's like a loophole in their religious system.
Yeah.
To do the super crazy complex meals, but very quickly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's pretty corporate. Yeah, I love it. Mm-hmm. So in the bags, they find a little bug.
A buggy bug. Little listening device.
Yeah, they have some bits on the Drowsy Ambassador before they destroy it.
Yeah, Lando is just living for the bits right now.
Yeah.
Veer is told after they destroy the bug, though, that he's going to be the new Centauri ambassador to Babylon 5 once Lando becomes emperor. Lanier reports for duty on White Store 27, a.k.a. the Maria, with Captain Montoya. Captain Montoya is great, except he has the worst Ranger frock that this costume department has put together.
Really?
It somehow is like three sizes too big on him.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like it's supposed to be a like poncho. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
And I just didn't catch. And like I don't know. I didn't want to live in that world because that felt a little racist to me. But I guess he could have requested it.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, the Ranger uniform, maybe it's built on like a Minbari template, you know, and maybe their shoulder dimensions and things are just a little. Just a little off from ours.
Marcus's was well tailored.
Yeah, well, come on. Marcus tailored his own if he had to, right?
Fair.
He just busted out the good fabric scissors. Did it himself. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're a little off in the dimensions, and it's just like, you know, this is what the tailors were doing today. We're going to have to tuck yours in at some point, Montoya.
Yeah. Jakar runs into Franklin, who has his eye finally.
Yeah, it's finally back. We're going to get the new eye this time, the one that's the right color.
Mm-hmm.
But first they have to talk to the Drazi ambassador.
Yes.
And the ambassador is now ready to just j'accuse the Centauri right off.
J'accuse!
Mm-hmm.
He's ready. Londo walks in at the same time and comments, oh, hey, it seems like this is a meeting I should have been invited to. Oh, well, I'm just going to dump on the Drazi ambassador and his wife a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just really rub it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Six tentacles, I guess. Ugh. Ugh. There. Got the dick joke for the episode in. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, we already had cocksure. It was fine. It was fine. I didn't need to force that one.
So, back on the Maria.
Yeah.
Fendel is paired up with Lanier, and they are told they're going to go scout about. It's a scouting exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
They talk about humans and how nobody gets humans, except Lanier's been around them enough. He feels, you know, like he understands.
Yeah.
Fendel's not into it.
Yeah. He's like, dude, I knew this ranger named Marcus. He was a human. Uh-huh. And just like any other pet, after enough time, they really, you know, you get to understand what they're thinking just looking at their face.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a weird conversation.
Mm-hmm.
After this, Franklin fucks with a sculpt of Jakar's head. Fucking, what a great job, prop department.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that this was 1997 or 8, so you could not, like, make this a little blinky guy or something, or make the mouth move.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was off the table. A little puppeteering was off the table, but this looks so fucking good.
It does. Yeah. I liked it. I mean, yeah. I didn't like the like digging around for an eyeball. That was weird, but it was a good job. Yeah. So Franklin has been reading the Book of Jakar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely past page 83 because he mentions the coffee cup stain on it.
I fucking love this.
Me too. I love this idea that we're going to reproduce an author's work exactly as it was written. And mm-hmm. You know how much of things that I've written would be covered in Cheeto dust? Like, I mean, other authors probably would have similar problems, I'm going to guess.
My handwriting is atrocious.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, like, compressed. It's very tight handwriting. And it is, like, as little strokes as possible because I can't move my pen as fast as I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's my problem. It's like, I want to get the thing out, and I physically can't move my hand at the speed that I want to be moving it. And my handwriting suffers from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have just, the lesson I should have taken away in handwriting classes when I was a kid was slow the fuck down.
Uh-huh.
But I have never learned that lesson. Yeah. And I don't intend to.
No, you just got to keep up with your brain.
That's a tombstone. That's what we're putting on the grave right there. I should have learned to slow down. I never learned this lesson and I never intend to.
Mm.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's good. Anyways, good fucking luck anyone who ever tries to read my notebooks. We've talked about our note-taking process before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I've mentioned it. I have handwritten notes of every episode of Babylon 5 that we've covered.
Yeah.
Every joke. No, not every joke because they're not all planned. But every joke that I had thought of beforehand.
Yeah.
Written
yeah.
out. Mm-hmm. Every little bit. I have like ways of writing different bits, like my little like whisper bit that I did for a while there. I like have a specific way of writing that in the notebook
uh-huh.
and stuff to signal that if someone were to try and decipher this, just fucking brava. Like, have at it. Good luck.
You don't think it'll be selling the million copies or whatever that the Book of Jakar has sold at this point?
No. I don't think anyone's interested in my handwritten pod notes.
Yeah, I guess there must be some traction for the Book of Jakar. Like,
yeah, well, there clearly is. Yeah.
If Franklin
the
was
Book of Jafar, no one's interested in. The Book of Jakar. Big sells.
I like that.
Get big and I can raise some money for charity or something. Maybe I'll raffle off the notebooks.
The Book of Jafar.
The Book of Jafar, yeah. The books, because it's 4 right now for Babylon 5.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be a 5th. It definitely will be a 5th before we're through Crusade, so. I'll have to take out all my like work notes and stuff, though. That'll get awkward real quick.
So Franklin tells us a little bit more about his foundationism and why that is, you know, why the Book of Jakar is so interesting to him. And he asks if he can come to Bible study.
Yeah. Yeah, just wants to learn a little bit more about everything. Lanier and Findel take out some Mimbari TIE defenders. When they notice the life support is fucked, they have an hour of air as the Maria pieces out.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. Like, we get out here, we have an hour of air, and nobody told us why we were why they were leaving or why we're out here.
Lanier tells Findel to enter a meditative state to conserve air.
Smart.
Findel struggles with this, but tries.
Yeah, I empathize, Findel. This does seem extremely hard.
Yeah. Jakar's lecture has turned to humor and the nature of truth and God. He gets asked a couple of poignant questions, of which he gives a really platonic answer. Like Plato, like not the other co-opted use of that term, which was used to describe things earlier in the episode, but actually Plato.
Yeah.
Answer. And I really like his answer.
I do too.
I thought it was very interesting, the analogy of the light and the lamp and God. And the more we focus on it, the more we forget that it's the light on the wall and not, you know, we forget about the lamp. You just see the light and stuff. It's very interesting.
Very poignant. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is too long-winded for one of his listeners.
Yeah.
So he's just like, the truth is a river.
Yeah. I think.
Oh, that sounds so.
Yeah. I don't think it's just that it's long-winded, but it's so nuanced that this gentleman just cannot grasp the nuance in this statement.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wants the easy answer.
Yeah. Famously, that's what you go to religion for. Right? you don't want to put in any of the work. You just want the easy answer.
Yeah,
that's sarcasm, to be clear. I probably shouldn't make that joke as an atheist. there's no way it comes across in any humorous way. It probably just sounds like I'm being an asshole. So
it definitely is just someone who wants the easy, concise answer, even if it is not correctly detailed. You know.
Yeah.
And so Jakar gives it to him. You know, the truth is a river and God is the mouth of the river. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. There's your soundbite.
No one is ever going to misconstrue anything that short and simple, right?
I hope not.
So back in the Mimbari fighters, which the way that they're shot, it seems like this is just like a pod and they're laying on their stomachs, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like that?
Yeah, they're little like coffin beds. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really small. So I don't know. I was trying to think about what it'd be like to be in space like that and like floating around, if it would be something that I could handle like physically.
So I think this is a weird choice for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
One, if the Mimbari have artificial gravity, right?
Yeah.
It might need to be big ships that have artificial gravity. I don't know. Maybe they can't get it on these small guys. We don't see Lanier like floating inside the little tube. Maybe he's supposed to be, you know,
could be.
Findel seems pretty grounded into the bottom of his bunk. Mm-hmm. Also, you think it would be padded all around then because you'd get jostled.
Oh, yeah. From all kinds of directions. Yeah.
If there was an artificial gravity holding you in place.
Or you'd have some kind of visible restraints, like you buckle mm-hmm. in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, isn't it, like, super bad luck for the Minbari to, like, lay down?
We had a whole episode about that. We had a whole thing. Okay, maybe it's not the whole episode, but that's what everybody remembers.
Yeah. Yeah, because they've got the little angled beds. There's all this stuff, right? Like, isn't this supposed to be really bad energy? Like, to do this thing that you're forcing your fighter pilots of all jobs to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if it'd be distracting to Lanier as he's trying to enter his meditative state to be like, I'm laying down. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're just sitting weird sometimes when you're trying to do some heavy concentration like that, that's all you can think about, right?
Mm-hmm. Findel is not calm himself. He's freaking out.
Yeah.
And Montoya comes back. This was a test, and Findel failed.
Yeah. It's kind of a mean test, but I get it. We're training for survival. We're training for these situations. That's hard to just put into a tabletop exercise. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Star Trek has the Kobayashi Maru. We need a thing, what this felt like.
Back on the station, Veer goes to confront the Drazi merchant, who then just makes a fool of him. Is like, what are you going to do about it? We all know you're a big pansy. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Veer Kodo's a bitch. And then there's like 15 dudes behind him who are just like, oh! Yeah.
Yeah. We get this fun sequence of Veer goes and just grabs Londo's sword, like from his dueling buddy off the wall, and then smashes all of this guy's fruit. Just
Gallagher's a watermelon right on this Drazi.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like rubbing grapes in his face. Like, how do you like these grapes?
Yeah, Londo is watching like a proud papa as Veer turns this Drazi's loaf into a juicer.
Yeah. Such a big growth moment for Veer.
It is.
He's just bloomed this episode. Yeah.
The next training exercise for the Lanier and the dude you're getting, Adels, is to creep around an asteroid field and find 10 short-range homing beacons and blow them up.
Yeah, they've got 10 beacons per person minus one. Mm-hmm. So we have 4 trainees out here, even though we haven't seen the other two. And there's only 39 beacons.
Yep.
So this is built in. Somebody's going to fail. You're all competing with one another this time. You're not just competing with yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Montoya makes a whole thing here about how, like, you have your full armament of stuff on this ship.
Mm-hmm.
Are there no bombs? Is there nothing that you could use to just like, oh, here's a swath of a bunch of asteroids. Just there's a little bomby boy.
Yeah.
You only have your little fighter lasers on these things.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't seem right. I feel like we've seen some other type of torpedo explosion-y thing that might have a radius.
Yeah.
Because that's my first thought is like, cool. I'll just like do a little canvassing of the area with some high yield explosives.
Uh-huh.
And see how many I got to get after that. Just fly above the asteroids. And maybe the lesson is avoiding danger that you don't need to deal with.
Yeah.
Because that's my approach. Is why are you flying around the asteroids when you could be safely away and firing at them and just hoping you get 10?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's like the kid who's really going to blow it out of the water is the one who remembers that he has bombs.
Findel is not super excited about this mission. And Lanier has the fucking nerve to say that your desire to be a ranger must be pure and unselfish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah. What's your desire, Lanier? Why are you here?
Mm-hmm. What brought you to the Anilashok, and don't say fucking Marcus.
Yeah.
Because we know that's a lie.
I mean, this is one of those times that where somebody is pointing out something, it's actually what they see in themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm criticizing this extra harshly because this is actually what I don't like about me.
Yeah.
Linear.
Findel does not take this pep talk well and decides to ram himself into an asteroid.
Yeah, he sets ramming speed.
Yeah.
He won't answer hails.
Linear takes manual control of his weapons, shoots out his engine, and pushes him out of the way of the asteroid to save his life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get back, Montoya dresses down Linear for firing on a friendly vessel.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And is going to send Findel to a recruitment office where he's going to test the will of Rangers and make sure that why they want to join is the right reasons.
Yeah, because apparently now he knows all about that, right?
Right. So
we
have a mutual friend in the armed services who's been there for a very long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Victor.
Yes.
My co-host on Last Time On. And more commonly known on Facebook as Dominion Media and Television.
Mm-hmm.
Vic has talked about his service a handful of times. And I did text him about this scene in particular. And then we had a bit of a conversation about it.
Okay.
Where he did mention it was cool to say his name and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, hey, I just watched this episode. I know you just rewatched Babylon 5 season 5 because we were talking about it the other day.
Uh-huh.
Does this happen, right? Like, is this a real thing where you have a soldier that just can't handle a combat situation, so you send them to a recruitment office rather than put them in that? And the not handling the combat situation is due to their mental health, right? And he responded immediately with, not only is that a known practice, but in the early 2010s, in the state in which he served, recruiting officer was the job that had the highest suicide rate in the military.
Wow.
And I was just like, literally my text back to him was, fuck. Just like,
you think about that in this context too.
Right?
Like, if he was already feeling a kind of way about being in the Rangers, how is this young man going to feel 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the road of signing up more eager young Rangers?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's fucking terrible. And especially in our country, where we have built the military as a proposed means to middle class for the lower class who can't escape poverty cycles, which I could rant about for fucking ever. So I'm going to spare you all for a moment.
Sure.
And just note that we know that the military is most attractive to people where it is their last option.
Mm-hmm.
And that the U.S. military the military itself tends to know this and abuse this, knowing the difference in suicide rates among classes and income statuses, and knowing all of these things and aligning it with this just paints such a fucking terrible picture about how we treat mental health as a society, as a country, and especially with veterans. I think we've talked about it a couple of times. I'm friends with numerous veterans that served in the second Iraq war, or any of the Afghani conflicts surrounding it. And they are part of like veterans groups. And I swear to fuck, every time I talk to them, they have a friend in the last 3 months who has committed suicide, it seems. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not actually keeping a tally because that's fucking
dark.
Grim.
Yeah.
But it that's the feel to me when I have these conversations with these people. And knowing that, knowing what Vic said, and watching this just hit me like a fucking sack of bricks. And it should. Mm-hmm. It should. It should feel terrible. Mm-hmm. It reinforces that I'm a human being with feelings.
Well, and that, you know,
it's just like, fuck.
If you are thinking about this beyond the surface level and can get there, that's really important with this show. There's a lot of things that are on the surface level are like, oh, that's fine. That's status quo. And then you got to think about it for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So back on the station, Zach.
Yeah. You got a dick joke or something?
No.
No. Okay. Me either. I wish I did.
So back on the station, Zach tells Delenn and Sheridan about Veer and how he's finally blossomed into a true Centauri. Sheridan muses about how he wishes he could use bugs.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you literally enlisted telepaths, dude.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, well, you had those telepaths, and gosh darn it, Lockley got rid of them. Gosh, wish she hadn't done that. And it was wrong then. Like, he's like, well, I can't use bugs because I'm being better than they are, except when I'm not.
Garibaldi is drunk and misses dinner. And he orders a suicide pizza.
Oh, I didn't catch that until you just said it.
Yep. I Googled this to see if it was a, like, if this collection of toppings or maybe like a double meat pizza.
Uh-huh,
like you have like your heart attack burgers,
sure,
right? Where it's
all
like, oh, it's a double with four slices of cheese and two fried eggs. It's a heart attack waiting to happen. Happy burger, America.
Yeah.
Enjoy your food trough. Here comes the gravy pipe. You know, like, no, it is not a thing. Every reference of suicide pizza, I put it in quotes so that way I wouldn't get weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would hope I didn't get weird shit. Everything was Babylon 5 Garibaldi ordering this pizza. And there's a whole thread on Reddit of people ordering this pizza.
Yeah. Do you think this was JMS tries to make it a thing? You know, like, this is my order. Let's make it a thing. Put it out there into the zeitgeist.
I when I started attending conventions, I promised myself I would not be this guy who brings up a specific detail of an episode. But if I get an opportunity to ask Joe a question again, it might be, what was up with calling that pizza that Garibaldi orders a suicide pizza? That seemed a little weird. I mean, it fit with the episode, but was it just to drive that home? Or are we to infer that Garibaldi's thinking about suicide? Or were you just trying to say, oh, it's an extra cheese double meat pizza, it's bad for you? Just which one of those or some other thing, please?
This is where we need a drop of Adam saying, I will take my answer at the tiki bar or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's it. Ugh. That's this episode.
That's this episode.
Mm-hmm. So now we have to rate it, comparing it
fuck
to our
episode.
Masterpiece that we made earlier.
Also a fuck this episode.
Oh, it's time. It's time again. I feel like we haven't had a fuck this episode for a while. Out of Huge Affair.
This episode is talks about important things that are worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And to ignore mental health, to ignore calls for help, to ignore other people's pain does not make it go away.
Yeah.
And those conversations are important. Mm-hmm. And like I said at the beginning of the episode, if this is something you struggle with or something that you know someone who struggles with, get help. Someone loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just my random amorphous voice coming through your ear pods right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's important to have that conversation.
I think this episode had a big miss
with
that.
It's very uncomfortable. Yeah.
Because,
for sure.
You know, we all had a chance to acknowledge it. You know, Veer is saving face for his friend. So that's admirable, whatever.
Yeah.
But Montoya was at the same thing that Lanier was at. And he saw
Montoya just sends him off after admitting that he listened to their entire conversation.
Yeah. He listened to it. He was, you know, even if he hadn't listened to it, he saw Fendel not answering, he saw his flight trajectory at an asteroid. Like, you're supposed to be a smart guy. You can put these two things together. And instead of having honest conversations, everybody just glosses over it and says, oh, well, you know, this is embarrassing for you. This is like, this is something we don't talk about. This is taboo. So we're just going to do this thing to help you without talking about the thing that is the source of it. So we're just going to cover it up a little bit. And that's really sad. Like, this episode had an opportunity to say something beyond the status quo and even just have Lanier have a more honest conversation, a longer conversation with Fendel. And it just doesn't. It missed on that.
For sure. And Delenn is so frustrating in this episode.
Yeah, these are weird choices.
So is Lanier.
Yeah.
So is Lanier. You know, just some weird fucking choices by Delenn there. Don't appreciate her lying about stuff when she doesn't need to. Serving no purpose other than to save her embarrassment. Or she's being shitty to her husband. Like, outside of their defined confines of their relationship, because Sheridan's made how he feels about all this real clear as well on camera. So we know how their relationship is structured, and it doesn't include Lanier.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This is weird, weird choices all around. I made my notes.
Veer with a sword, though.
Veer with a sword. I'll give it a one just for Veer with a sword.
I'm going to take Veer with a sword, take it out of the episode, and rate it a 4.
Yeah.
And then everything else is a fuck this episode.
Yeah, Veer with a sword. Very, very satisfying. Very good. Even the bits on the Drazi ambassador, even though they're very silly.
Way unnecessary.
They're like silly, unnecessary. Also kind of steeped in a little bit of like maybe misogyny, like because we're
in more than maybe.
Yeah,
it's definitely some misogyny.
We're attacking the man through his wife who is his property or whatever. The dialogue is delivered extremely well by Peter Jurasik.
Yes.
He's
I don't
great
even
with
bring
a bit.
The Pac Mara into it.
Yeah.
You know, do the whole bit if you're going to do the thing.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to be a misogynistic asshole and make comments you shouldn't. Fucking own it. Go all the way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to respect you either way, but at least you did the thing you were trying to do.
I have 3.5 pages of notes on this episode. It just was like, I just wrote the beats and I didn't have a lot else to say about it except the things I didn't like. So,
Hey, I mean, we're at 1:15 of recording right now. I know some of that's going to get edited out, but
probably
like 15 minutes of it, to be perfectly honest, given
we've been a bit silly tonight. That's all
we have. And no CBD tea. I should be drinking that right now.
Yeah. So that's Meditations on the Abyss. That's it.
Yeah. Well, we're not quite done with that abyss because we've got season 5, episode 15, Darkness Ascending next. Lanier's discovery of the Centauri involvement in the shipping line attack promises to cause an all-out war.
Uh-oh.
Leeta makes a deal with Chakar to find a home for the telepaths.
Oh, interesting.
The obvious fucking solution they could have gone for in the first place.
Yeah, the one that, like, made itself evident after the pilot. Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Garibaldi's alcoholism worsens.
Oh, no. Don't like that. Yep. All right.
I wonder if these plots, like the telepath plot, Garibaldi's alcoholism, and Incel Lanier, if they were spread out over 4 seasons instead of all being at the same time, if we would hold the same contempt for season 5.
Yeah, I don't really count Garibaldi's alcoholism in there because that's been pretty well established.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's been a work in progress for the whole show. So,
yeah.
Incel Lanier and the telepath crisis do seem like they just came out of nowhere for season 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. All we can do is say thank you to Jeremy Siegel for our lovely theme music. Thanks, Jeremy. Really liked having you on last week. It was a blast having a conversation.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
And now I hear you saying you're welcome when I say thank you for our lovely theme music.
You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com.
Or streaming services as Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Duck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
We need to find out his new band's name that he's playing gigs with and see if they're on Spotify.
I'm going to text him tonight and see how that went. See how that gig
Yeah,
went.
Let me know.
Yeah.
Also, Aaron. Hey, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for editing this episode. I did not make it easy for you this time.
No,
that content warning was recorded 20 minutes into the episode, and the cold open is a fucking mess. So I hope it's good.
We made it.
And if it is,
hard.
It's because of you.
Uh-huh. Yep. All credit to Aaron for this podcast.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And thank you to you, the listener, for putting up with it once it got edited out. I think it was a little easier. So I hope.
Yeah. Send us your season 5 thoughts so that we can record that series recap, season recap episode in a number of weeks here.
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook for that or at our email at whoareyoub5@gmail.com.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week, Internet.
Bye.
I thought we were professionals, Laura.
We were so,
so cocksure.